Welcome to The Offer, the no-sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter. The Offer, unfiltered. Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. 2021 is finally here, and I'm launching season three as customarily as I do every year with a new episode of Bad Bosses. However, this year we're going to take a little bit of a different approach. I'm bringing on the show Jeff Harry. Jeff has brought to my attention this idea of creating a playful work environment and really getting rid of the toxicity in the workplace. And I thought this is a great way to start out the new season 2021 with something positive and energizing. And so I brought Jeff on the show to discuss, what does it mean to make a playful environment? What is a playful environment? You know, what do we do? And he'll introduce us to this concept. He's also going to talk a little bit about some of the successes that he's had, as well as how a company can make their work environment more playful for their employees as well. So I'd like to welcome to the show Jeff, so we can talk a little bit about making our workplace playful. Listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. I am getting ready to launch my third season, as I told you, and every season I usually launch the season with an episode of Bad Bosses, and I almost feel like that your background and what we're going to talk about today could almost take the place of that. Well, because in a good way, because you brought up something in our discussion that was very intriguing to me, and that was this thought process, this notion of having a playful workplace. And I've actually gotten some time to think about that thought process, and I actually think it's a great thought process. And the reason why is, you know, I think we take our jobs too seriously sometimes.
Oh, yes. Completely.
And I don't think that I think part of it is the employer, right? They don't create a sense of, you know, we have a mission, right? But let's have fun doing it. Like let's make it something where we're all having a good time while we create success.
Right.
And I think the problem is that companies miss that. You know, to them it's, let's take care of business. But they don't think about, you know, is it making my team excited to even do this? Uh-huh. So I guess my first question is, tell my audience your background and how did you come up with this concept of a playful workplace?
Sure. So the quick version is, I saw the movie Big when I was a kid. And in that movie, Tom Hanks got the job playing with toys for a living. So I was in third grade and I was like, you can get paid to do that. So I started writing toy companies in third grade and I just never stopped until I actually got into the toy industry like 15 years later. And it was a perfect example of getting into a dream industry and then just being so disappointed when I arrived, because there was like no play, no fun, you know, no toys, no kids, no high fives. Like, we might as well have been selling microwaves or socks, even though this was supposed to be a fun, you know, company. And I left disillusioned. That was in New York. I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area, bumped into an organization teaching kids engineering with Lego. There were only 7 people at the time. They were paying $150 a week, but they got to play for a living. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. So I helped them. And then we grew it into the largest Lego-inspired STEM organization, like in the US. Like, we taught over 1 million kids in the span of like 12 years. And the way we built the entire organization was by playing. Like, you know, we had no business plan. We picked cities because we thought they were fun. We picked people because we thought they were fun. We experimented all the time. We made a ton of mistakes. But because we got so large, Silicon Valley started to pay attention to us, like Facebook, Google, Adobe, Netflix, PayPal. And we started, they asked us, do you do team building events? And we were like, yeah, of course we do, even though we didn't, but we would just say yes to everything, right? And, you know, for the next 7 to 8 years, maybe even longer, I ran team building events for the top tech companies like in the world. And what I found was at the same time that they wanted to be agile and disruptive and innovate, they had not created a playful work environment. Even those companies had not created a play-oriented work environment for people to really take risks, for them to really share. So I created Rediscover Your Play, my organization, combining positive psychology and play to address really important issues that they were tiptoeing around, like dealing with toxicity at work, dealing with office politics, how to get your staff in flow, how to deal with your inner critic, you know, how to deal with toxic masculinity or race, and how to have hard conversations. And I do that all through positive psychology and play.
So what does play mean? Does play mean, you know, people would think, when people think of play, the first, and the work environment, the first thing they think of is non-productivity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, explain to the manager out there thinking this guy's nuts on, when you say play, what exactly does that mean?
Yes. So first off, yes, many companies that I approach first see play as frivolous, right? But I define play as any joyful act where you are fully present in the moment, where there is no purpose, there is no result. You don't have anxiety about the future. You don't have regrets about the past. You are just fully in the zone. You are fully doing the work that makes you come alive. And as much as companies, a lot of tech companies that I work with, don't like talking about the word play, they do love talking about the word flow, because flow is all about, how do I get my staff to do the work that they do best? Marcus Buckingham refers to it as your red thread work. You know, what is it? Gay Hendricks refers to it as your zone of genius. You have your zone of incompetence, things you're not good at, zone of competence, things you're average at, zone of excellence, which a lot of people are in, where they do things that they're good at or great at, but they don't really care either way. But then there's the zone of genius, the work that you do where you forget about time, the work where if you weren't even getting paid, you still would do that work. And that is the type of work that I help companies, help their teams get into more, because the more their staff is able to do their flow work, it has an exponential productivity increase in all the other work that they do.
Is part of that the concept of people feeling like they actually have a purpose?
Well, it's more about people following their curiosity. Right. So say, for example, Google, this is a good example, is Google has their 20% program where they let their staff pursue something that interests them, as long as it helps out the business. And they give them a fifth of their time to do that. And what has been created because of this? Google Meet, Gmail, billion-dollar ventures have appeared because of this. Now, most small businesses can't obviously give their staff a fifth of their time, but I've told many team leaders, you can go to your staff right now. If you want to engage your employees right now, go to them in this virtual environment and ask them, what is the work that you love doing most? What's the work where you forget about time? You just love doing this work. Okay, what percentage of that time do you do that work, right? Oh, I love talking to clients. I love connecting with people. Oh, okay. What percentage of time do you do that? Oh, I only do that maybe 10, 15% of the time. How can we increase that from 10% to maybe like 15 or 17%? Maybe that's just 1 to 2 extra hours. But when you're able to do that, it has a ripple effect on all of the other work that you do. And, you know, the other thing I tell a lot of businesses that are like, yeah, well, I don't know if play is really important. If you think of the companies right now that are thriving, they're the ones that are playing. Because Steven Johnson says the future is where people are having the most fun. Look at where all the money's going right now, to TikTok, to Netflix, to Disney Plus, you know, to Hulu. Like, there's all these organizations that have been quite adaptable during this time and have, you know, and are thriving. And when you don't play as a company, then you become the next blockbuster.
Right. But let me ask you a question. Now I'm going to push back a little bit. You can't.
Yeah. Sure.
How can you make a plant that makes meat products a playful place? I mean, they're slaughtering pigs to make bacon. I mean, how can you make that playful?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think at this point, it's about empowering your staff. Many managers spend a lot of time micromanaging their staff. They do not empower their staff. And I challenge a lot of team leaders to be like, you should be trying to organize yourself out of a job, which sounds really weird, but it's like, if you can grow other leaders, they will make you look good. And they'll make you look so good that you'll get promoted to some other job. So let's say it was you were working at a meatpacking, you know, plant, and you're struggling with a certain answer. I would gather a bunch of your team together and be like, hey, you know, we need to solve this. But this time I am going to allow you, I want to hear the most creative ideas out there. And I'm going to empower you to try these out. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to actually fail, to actually test a lot of the experiments out as we're trying to figure out, you know, a better way of, you know, working the assembly line, right? Or a better way in which we're going to market this product, you know, or a better way to address this COVID issue. You can take actual serious issues, but use a more play-oriented mindset to empower your staff to experiment. Because the more, you know, I've been saying this for a while now, the companies that were more willing to fail in 2020 are the ones that are willing to thrive, or actually ones that did thrive, right? While other companies that have been very scared and been, you know, being close to the chest and basically doing what they've always done, like we're going to market the same way we've always marketed, we're going to do sales the same way, are failing miserably. Because they're not adapting to this new reality. And the fact of the matter is we're not going back to normal when this thing is over. It's going to be a brand new normal. And if you're not able to adapt and empower your staff to figure out the answers on their own in a way where they believe they can actually take risks, you are putting yourself in a really bad predicament.
So what about when you have a toxic work culture? What about when, especially when it comes to management, you know?
Yeah.
All this play stuff, right? All these changes that we want to make every single day, it's all contingent on the fact that you have a workforce that treats their people correctly. I mean, at the end of the day, you can have all the fun, playful ideas you want, but if the management that runs the organization doesn't treat their people properly, then none of this stuff will work. And it doesn't it doesn't take all of management. It could just be one bad manager causing
exactly right
this major disruption in the process to actually make this successful. How does one deal with that? You know, let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say you're in a company where you run a department. And you have this mentality, like you're saying, that you want to create a playful environment. But then you, one of the other departments that you work closely with, the manager is authoritarian. He's an, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's an asshole. And so you're working against the grain because you've got one department where the people are miserable. And then you've got your department where everybody is, you know, rolling around doing cartwheels and dancing on, you know, life-size keyboards.
Right.
How do you promote play in an environment where there's other people that are promoting, you know, these narcissistic behaviors?
Yeah. So that's a great question, right? So I just ran a workshop, you know, my friend Gary Ware and I run a workshop called Dealing with A-Holes at Work Through Play, right? You know, that we never thought we're gonna, you know, we'd get off the ground and instead, like, we won all these awards for it, right? So I was just running this with the Department of Homeland Security, you know, a government agency. And, you know, they have a lot of toxicity, you know, in that workplace, right?
Well, especially now, but yeah.
especially now, right? But there is something about first focusing on what is within your circle of influence. And I can get into the steps of dealing with a toxic person in just a minute. But there, if you can show in your department or in your team that your team is thriving, that you're retaining more employees, that you're saving the company money, you know, whenever we're running this workshop or we're talking to a company about why we should run this workshop, all we need to tell them is, you know, in October of 2019, Sherm did a study where they found out that out of Fortune 500 companies alone, only Fortune 500 companies alone, they had lost $223 billion due to turnover just in the last 5 years. And these are only the companies that are willing to admit that they had a toxic person. So there's all these companies losing hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars due to turnover because of a toxic person. So you first in your team have to show how to lead correctly, or not even correctly, but how to lead from a healthy place. Because that's the most important part. Like, let's just focus on our circle of influence. But then second, then you need to then approach, like, let's say you do have a colleague that runs a different department in a narcissistic way. You know, you have to approach that supervisor or the supervisor or the team above it and just be like, what are we trying to do? At the end of the day, what is our goal? Our goal is to make money. Our goal is to hit our quarterly results. And certain departments and teams are, and certain departments are not. These are the ways in which I'm doing it. It's working. You know, can we consider adopting these strategies for other teams? And then here's the rub, right? Well, because then, of course, supervisors are like, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Hey, narcissistic guy, let's use Chad. We'll call him Chad for a second. Hey, Chad, would you willing to adopt these ideas? Nah, the ideas are dumb. Okay, well, Chad, let's look at your numbers. Yeah, you're doing really bad. Okay, people are quitting. When was the last time we looked at turnover in your department? You've had 7 people turnover in the last year. How much money is that costing? And here's the ironic part is sometimes Chad is the brilliant jerk, as Simon Sinek references people, right? It's the person that brings in the most amount of revenue. But as Simon Sinek said about the Navy SEALs, they'll never take the brilliant jerk, even if they're the most athletic, brave, smartest, because they destroy the team. You see this with sports teams all the time when a star leaves and then all of a sudden the team gets better. So you can look at Chad's department and be like, hey, Chad, I know you brought in $1.5 million last year, but you also had those 7 people that quit. How much does that cost us? Oh, that costs us $2 million. Hey, guess what, supervisor? Chad's costing us $500,000 a year. You know, this is the impact that's having acting this way. So that's, I think, something that we really need to analyze is from, like, what is the impact that it's having? Now, you can also confront Chad directly. You can go up to Chad and be like, look, Chad, you know, we didn't hit our numbers this year, so we're not getting our bonuses the way we wanted to. Your behavior, or, you know, you don't attack the character, but you you address the behavior, and you go, Chad, when you're rude to Samantha and John and this person, they don't want to be here anymore. And you might, and this is the impact that you're having. And you might be realized that narcissist might not even know the impact they're having. So it's worth at least pointing that out to them. And then if they're like, oh yeah, I didn't realize I did that, they might change their behavior. Or they may just be like, F you, I'm gonna do whatever I want. And it's at that point where you're like, look, I've spoken to him and he's willing to not change his ways and we're losing money because of him. And then it challenges staff to be like, is this the type of culture that we want? You know, and then the thing that is that is also really important is, as much as this might be a little sneaky, right? But I would be talking to also Chad's staff and being like, you got to stand up for yourself, you know, and here's the reason is because as long as we allow Chad to act the way he acts, we are committing to a culture of supporting his narcissism. But if we, next time he's rude to one of us and we go, Chad, don't ever disrespect me that way. And you can say that to him as a colleague, right? it will also, if you do it in front of his staff, it also empowers his staff to also start to set boundaries, because that is our biggest issue, is we're not willing to have that hard conversation and start telling Chad his behavior is not tolerated anymore. And then when that is happening, where a lot of people are setting boundaries, Chad either has to change his behavior or he has to leave because he's not effective anymore.
This goes back then to, so with a manager that's creating a hostile workplace or fundamentally going against the grain when it comes to what other people are trying to do, it's essentially keeping your people from how do you prevent people from then getting the negativity from that group? I guess is the best way I guess I can put it.
I mean, at first you can't, right? You first have to insulate your group and you have to point out, like, be transparent. This is not how this company runs. Because if you don't say anything, then your staff's going to be like, oh, I guess the culture is that they just allow this narcissist to run wild, right? Mm-hmm. So you first have to be transparent about that. Right. And then, and this is something that I've done successfully, but it's taken many years, is you are constantly going up to that person's supervisor and be like, you know, it's not one conversation, but it's constantly pointing out what this is happening, because you have to actually build a case as to why that strategy of narcissism isn't working. Because maybe usually that narcissist has been there forever. Right. And they've just been allowed to do whatever they want. But you'd be amazed how quickly a company can shift once you are able to address that first narcissist. Because I remember doing this with a company I was a part of like 10 years ago, and it shifted the entire organization because it sent a message when we got rid of that person that we don't tolerate that behavior anymore. And we apologize that we had been tolerating it, but we don't tolerate it anymore.
So what do we do as far as how does an individual, if you're an individual trying to create this playful environment within the workplace, and you're doing this, you're doing this as a way to help your team. Do you have to go and then kind of like do you have to get the upper management involved in the idea? How do you sell them on it? How do you get them to support the idea? Like, because, you know, there's a lot of risks and uncertainty behind trying to do something like this. And I think there's going to be a concern from the higher up saying, well, you know, this sounds like a great idea, but what happens if it fails? And do we really want to absorb the cost of this failing? Do you have to get pre-approval? Is it important to have executive support?
I think it depends on what you're trying to do, right? If you are simply trying to empower your staff and you're giving them freedom to tackle some answer or some challenge that they're trying to address, you know, internally, or you're trying to figure out how to get them to do more of their flow work, the work that they do best, you know, the work that they forget about time, then I don't think you need to ask for the approval of upper management. But if you're trying to like approach, you know, an idea in a different way, then you really, yeah, then you probably do. I mean, I think of some examples from like a marketing standpoint, right? Like, take for example, TikTok. You know, the Buffalo Bills just got these two kids, you know, and they gave them a whole floor on the, you know, in the Buffalo Bills facility. And they're like, we just want you to make TikToks. We just want you to make videos all day, you know, do whatever you want. And their engagement levels on all of their social media platforms shot up because these two kids were just messing around. You know, another example, Washington Post, a really boring newspaper, now has Gen Zers along with Gen Xers and Zennials actually potentially buying or utilizing Washington Post services simply because this one guy is making ridiculous TikToks representing the Washington Post. So like, you know, it's just more the idea of like, hey, all right, we're going to try to experiment with this thing. I would go up to a supervisor and be like, we want to experiment. We know that there's a possibility we might fail. But right now, what's the alternatives? Because the way we're marketing right now is not working. You know, the way in which we're doing sales is not working. The way in which we're doing cold calling is not working. The way in which we're working the assembly line or, you know, or the operation system isn't working as well in this virtual environment. We all know this. So I'm willing to try this out and take a risk here, but I want your approval that if it fails, like, hey, you know, you're going to fail here because we're already failing. Right?
Oh, I see. With the,
we're already doing mediocre work, right? Like,
what does it matter? What does it matter if we try? Because if we try and it doesn't work, at least we tried.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I keep going back to the idea of like the companies that are willing to fail the most are the ones that are going to be successful. Like you think of the Dyson vacuum cleaner. That guy was in his basement for 5 years while his wife was a teacher that was basically supporting them while he was working on the Dyson vacuum cleaner. And he had 6,500 iterations of that product, 6,541 failures, right? And then he created one of the greatest vacuum cleaners, and now he's a multi-billionaire. So, like, yo, guess what? That's part of the process. I think the biggest issue that I think we have at work is we are not willing to experiment. We are not willing to fail. We're not willing to have hard conversations. We're not willing to practice. Like, I think of football, they practice all week for a three-hour game. We can't even practice how to have a hard conversation. We can't even practice, like, testing things out to see if they would fail or not. So, like, we're not giving ourselves the freedom to experiment, which is ironic because the entire startup world, how every company began, was an experiment. They were just like, I wonder if this is going to work or not. Hey, let's try this out. I don't know if this is going to work or not work, right? And then a perfect example of how play can actually help your business thrive more than fear was, you know, I always reference the Wright brothers. The Wright brothers were two mechanics, bike mechanics, by the way, that were just like, I want to make this flying thing, you know? All of their town was laughing at them at first, but they kept trying. And the more they kept trying, people were like, well, why don't I help this person out? You know, maybe I can help them out in this way or this way, or, you know, sort of giving them money and just supporting them in various ways. But they were just experimenting because it was fun. They just wanted to see if they could do it. Meanwhile, and a lot of people don't know this, I believe it was Chrysler and Ford had put all this money and backed it by hiring all these scientists to figure out how to make a flying machine. So they had the money, they had millions of dollars, they had all of the best minds like in the US, you know, they had the backing and the support of entire companies, and they failed. And the reason they failed
we still don't have a flying machine.
Yet with such a tense environment, right? While these guys, these two dudes were just having fun, just experimenting, didn't really care if that, you know, if it didn't work or not, they would just go back to the drawing board. And that is the mentality of a company that thrives. You know, a Zappos, for example, you know, Miss Tony Shea now is like, he would do experiments like paying people $3,000 to leave their company, to leave the company. Like you'd be there for a month and he's like, yeah, if you don't really want to be here, I'll give you $3,000 to leave. And by doing that through action, he was able to keep his culture going because anyone that took the money wasn't right for him. It was just like, yeah, they'd rather have money than be themselves and show up in costumes from time to time. So again, we have to think about what actions are we doing to actually communicate the missions and the values that we claim to do, because I think there's at least 90% of companies right now that are not following through on their mission and values.
Okay, so one last question. If I'm a company, how do I get started? Like, you know, how do I know what's going to make it a playful place for my employees?
I think you start with, you know, the staff that's right in front of you. Find out what is the work they love to do most. Find out their play work, their flow work, and allow them a little bit more time to do that work and see what impact that might have. And after you see that, then it'll have a ripple effect and be like, whoa, you know, I gave Danny like, you know, 2 extra hours a week to pursue something, you know, in order to solve this problem that we're struggling with. Mm-hmm. That actually worked really well. Hey, Danny, hey, let me give you like 4 more hours and let's see what you can do with that. And then you start to see people and start seeing skill sets that they might have not been using, right? you know? And the other part about it is then you start, by doing this, you are also re-engaging your employees, because you're communicating to your employees that I see you, I care about you, I actually want to know what you love to do. Because right now, I'll tell you this, a lot of these staffers of yours are looking for other jobs. 85% of the workforce was disengaged at work before the pandemic. So imagine what they're like now. So I would start there with figuring out that. And then after you've done that and you see that that works, because again, it's just an experiment, then be like, all right, let's think of another way in which we can play, right? Let's go into a brainstorming meeting. Like, let's talk about brainstorming meetings, right? And be like, we're going to yes and this entire brainstorming meeting, meaning there will be no criticism. We are just going to write all of the best ideas, all of the ideas on the board. We're going to put them all on here. And then at the end, we're going to just circle the ones that we really enjoy most. That's what we're going to do. We're going to positively prime our meetings. How do you do that? You go into the meeting and the first person that shares, even before the meeting starts, the first person that shares anything happy actually primes the meeting for positivity. So if they're sharing about their baby or about, you know, something that's happening that's great, you know, that's going on in the world, that actually primes the meeting. Usually we complain to start meetings. So we can do a lot of these really small play experiments to start to re-engage your staff again. And then finally, you can go to your supervisors and be like, all right, I have this crazy idea of a way in which we can address one of our biggest issues. Are you willing to have us take that risk? And see where that takes you.
What's the best, so what's your gig? If someone's listening to this episode, they're like, wow, I love this guy. I mean, what do you offer people? You know, how do they get a hold of you? Yada, yada, yada.
Sure. So, you know, at Rediscover Your Play, we help teams address hard conversations and their most challenging issues using positive psychology and play. So what I do for teams is I help you deal with that toxic person at work. I help you deal with office politics. For people that are struggling with creativity, we talk about how to deal with your inner critic. I help your staff get back into flow. We also even challenge founders that you know, startup founders that claim they're making an impact on the world. And we actually run them through a BS meter to be like, are you really making an impact, or is it just doing things that make you feel good? You know, So we run a lot of workshops like that, like lifting the veil, you know, on the workplace in order to create a more psychologically safe workplace. And the way you can find me is you simply go to Rediscover Your Play, click on the Let's Play button. We can hop on a call and we can figure out how you can help your company kick ass and like create like a more fun work environment, because isn't that what we should be doing? Should we be having more fun at work? It's a third of our life. We should be having more fun at work.
No, it's true. I mean, I tell people all the time, someone can pay you $1 million a year, but if you're not going to be happy at work, what's the point? You're just miserable. And then that creeps into your personal life and your professional life and everybody.
Yeah. And I will say this, like, you know, two of the top regrets of the dying is I worked too much. And the second is I didn't have the courage to live the life I wanted to live, but instead live the life that others expected of me. How many people do you know that are not claiming their worth, but instead not claiming who they are, but chasing their worth and trying to impress their boss or their colleagues? And I'm like, who are you trying to impress right now? You know, instead figure out the work that actually makes you come alive, because that's frankly what the world needs. That's what Howard Thurman says all the time. We need to figure that out, because, you know, or else we're just kind of wasting away. You know, learn from the dying. They're telling us we need to find out what makes us really play in life.
You heard funny. You're great. I love your energy. That's for sure. Awesome talking to you. I think that you may be my first episode of the new season. I'm not sure yet, but certainly I'm very excited for my listeners to listen to you, because I do think you bring a lot of great value. And I think that your energy really gets people excited for sure. I appreciate your time today, and certainly hope you have a safe and happy holiday and you don't have any issues as far as this COVID stuff going on.
Yeah. You too, man. Take care of yourself.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.